Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Welcome to the Tennis Podcast, live from Melbourne, from Tennis Podcast Towers. For those of you that are joining us on YouTube, this is our kitchen. David and I have accidentally matched outfits today, and Matt is wearing his Fulham t-shirt. A little bit of bonus content as a reward for people joining us live on YouTube.
Well, it's Derby Day, and you know, we like with these live shows to invite people into our world, don't we, while we're at these slams. And I will be watching Fulham Chelsea tonight.
Yeah, at 11 p.m.
I think it's 11:30 Melbourne time.
Great. David and I have accidentally got ourselves embroiled in a sort of who wore it better situation.
Yeah, I did briefly offer to change into an on the boat one, but the view was that you know, one of the last times we were doing this, the words were uttered. So, you know, we might as well wear shit the microphones.
Yes, it's fitting in every possible way. And I hope that anybody that's seeing us right now, or indeed after the fact, is enjoying the visual joy that we're bringing you right now. This is our Media Day show. We're doing them live for 2024. Media Day was yesterday. Props to the WTA, who brought all of their top players on Media Day as scheduled. Two stragglers for the ATP, as always. And of course, it's Novak Djokovic and Carlos Alcaraz. So they're coming in later on today. If they've got anything interesting to say, that sounds a bit harsh, whatever interesting stuff they have to say, we will make sure we inform you about it over the course of the next couple of days, or well, probably tomorrow, because Novak Djokovic opens tomorrow evening, doesn't he? But we've had a lot from Novak Djokovic over the past couple of weeks in Perth, of course, at the United Cup. And Carlos Alcaraz, we love Carlos Alcaraz, but doesn't tend to be a stop the presses Media Day kind of a guy.
He's a sort of lovely presence, isn't he? And he makes the room light up because he's so nice, and he smiles and he engages, and he's very polite to us all, and he never sort of rolls his eyes at us. All these lovely things, but you don't get much in the way of like barnstorming quotes out of it, do you?
No, not always. And actually, I've been doing some translations of Alcaraz's Spanish press conferences recently for, I don't know, a project that I can't say too much about. Not my own project. But I've been sending those translations to the person, and this guy has said, actually quite reassuring, that he's not giving the Spanish press much more than he's giving the English-speaking press either.
Whereas Nadal, of course, Matt's been a secret weapon for us in some Nadal press conferences over the years. Because
and Alejandro Davidovich Fokina.
Well, he does that on the court. Then we need to go to the press conference.
What did he say again?
He said, me he cagalo. I shat myself.
Every so often I just get him to say that.
I sort of wish I was wearing a t-shirt with that on, to be honest, rather than a t-shirt quoting myself. But I do love it, hence why I'm wearing it. Just before we get into the nitty-gritty, I would like to tell you about On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. We are proud to be sponsored by On Location throughout the Australian Open. And for the first time in history, official Paris 2024 travel packages from On Location are available online, making it easy for you to enjoy the thrill of the Olympic Games and the wonder of Paris like never before. It's brilliant being able to deliver an ad read like this with total integrity. When I say thrill of the Olympic Games, I really, really mean it.
We got this one right, didn't we?
Your Olympic Games adventure comes with guaranteed tickets to the sport events of your choice and accommodation in Paris, plus world-class hospitality and options for custom tours and activities to immerse you in French culture, food, shopping, and more. On Location's wide range of official travel packages has been created to suit every need, from shorter stays, such as the Discover 2024 package, to longer ones like the Explore 2024 package. All include guaranteed tickets to sport event categories A through D. Sure, they're great categories, and they come with multiple possibilities for add-on services and elevated hospitality options. So if you're interested, just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast, toursfortennis.com/podcast, and select Olympic Games hospitality to see what they have to offer. Packages can be purchased online, or a dedicated On Location team member can contact you directly to create your perfect bespoke package. And of course, the link to check them out is available in our show notes and in our newsletter. I asked a few players about Olympics yesterday during media day. I just couldn't help myself. Just
on brand.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter which time of the year.
You were thinking about the segue in the podcast.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. In hard-hitting journalism news, I asked about the Eras Tour and the Olympics.
They got good answers. They really, did.
The players helped me out a bit and sort of justified my asking the questions. The Eras Tour question was to Iga Świątek, which I guess is perhaps where we should start, because we haven't had our men's top seed through the interview room yet. He's always late, isn't he, Djokovic? He's always the day after advertised.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think for a lot of the journalists, it's actually quite helpful because it gives them something today that they can use in publications and online and everything else for tomorrow, you know, that is just fresh and freshening it all up. And the thing is, you only need one or two of that kind of stature, I suppose, name-wise, to carry a piece. But it did. I'm quite pleased they do it that way, because it gives a bit more space for the ones that were yesterday to have their moments and for us to really highlight them.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. That's absolutely not why the ATP or Novak Djokovic have arranged for themselves to be late. But yes, there is some upside, absolutely. So Iga Świątek, on the basis of what we saw from her at Media Day, is she going to win the Australian Open?
I mean, I will pick her to win the Australian Open. I'll tell you that right now, because I think I pick her to win most Grand Slams. I think if we were to go back over the last 2 years, I think I've probably picked her to win every Grand Slam, because I just think she's the best player. And that being the case, she's actually under-delivered. No, she has, really, I think, because I think she could have won them all. When have I said that before? But, you know, I'm surprised she's yet to win either Wimbledon or last year's US Open or an Australian Open. If you'd have told me she'd won none of those in that time period, I'd be surprised.
It was quite interesting, though, wasn't it? Because she spoke about the US Open that she won in 2022 yesterday as a surprise, because she was talking about, and again, it was Matt Futterman that asked the question about her new serve that she's got this year and sort of how it came about. And she actually said that she was planning to change it all the way back in 2022, but then sort of said, but then I happened to win the US Open. And I thought, why would I change it after a success like that? But it's clearly been something she's been thinking about for a long time. But it is interesting, if you look at her slam count, obviously she is amazing at Roland Garros. We know that for sure. She's the best player on clay by far. But she's only got that one US Open title. Like, it's a lot more open when we get onto a hard court. And, you know, she said she won that US Open kind of as a surprise. She didn't have anywhere near her best tennis. But I do think since the 2023 US Open, I think Świątek's got better in a way. Mm. I think briefly going to number two in the world was actually a really helpful thing for her. Relieved a lot of the pressure she was feeling. She described the off-season as peaceful, didn't she? And, you know, only Caroline Garcia's really taken sets off her in the last sort of 15 or 20 matches or so. She is in brilliant form. And, she spoke about her change to her serve as something that she thinks will help her in tight moments. She spoke a lot about, she feels like the losses she has suffered have often been because she's tight or stressed or nervous. And I think that would probably be our reading on a lot of those matches as well. She can seem quite stressed sometimes and the unforced errors can come. So, you know, that's always there for Świątek, but it feels like she's getting it under control even more. And I do think, based on her form, she's got to be the favourite, hasn't she? I mean, I just think it's so hard to beat Iga Świątek. And, you know, Australia feels like a slam where she hasn't quite played her best yet, but I'm expecting that to happen this fortnight.
It's interesting. She's done some sort of explaining why she hasn't won those, or hinting at why she hasn't won those slams that you were expecting her to win, those failure slams, David. And sort of she explained about the US Open last year. She said she was really stressed during that US Open. Now, she didn't tell us that at the time, did she? And the same with Australian Open last year, kind of after she lost to Rybakina, she revealed that she'd been feeling the pressure and expectation of having that target on her back. But she's quite hard to read body language wise because she's kind of always pretty taut, isn't she? It's not like, oh, you can, you know, I feel like I'm a pretty decent body language reader. I'm always looking out for, you know, tightness in the jaw or slightly raised shoulders. And you can't really tell with her, and she doesn't tell you in the moment, oh, I'm not quite feeling right just now. I mean, fair enough. Plenty of ex-greats will tell you, you know, don't give anything away. It's a gift to your opponents. But she kind of does tell you a bit after the fact. And there was I asked her about the Eras Tour because I knew she was a Taylor Swift fan. I asked her about that because I kind of wanted to gauge how much she was prepared to be loose and engage with a fun question. Because sometimes, kind of early on in her career, she was quite up for that, wasn't she? And Natalie, she's just not been quite as up for that. And she didn't. She did really engage with it to start with. She said, "Yeah, I'm definitely going to go. I assume my agent's going to get me tickets."
She said something very unrelatable about tickets are not an issue.
She said tickets are not an issue.
She's then, not winning a Ticketmaster queue.
Ticketmaster queue. Then a sort of look of panic came across her face and she went, "Oh, I assume my agent will sort me tickets." And I assume he started sweating at that point. Anyway, and then she said something quite revealing. I said, "Are you going to go in Poland?" Because niche Taylor Swift knowledge here, this is the first time she's ever played. This will be the first time she's ever played in Poland. I believe it's a really big deal that the Eras Tour is coming to Warsaw. And Świątek said, "Oh no, because everyone will be looking at me." And then she panicked about saying that. She said, no, of course they'll be looking at Taylor. Like, I'm not suggesting I'm a bigger deal than Taylor Swift. And it all sort of, it was all very genial, but it sort of spiraled a bit and I could see the cogs in her brain turning. But that was quite revealing that she wouldn't go in Poland because of the worry of the spotlight. I mean, that was a feature of her previous off-season, wasn't it? And that's adjusting right to all of that. And she talked about there having been too many distractions in the last off-season. So that word that you picked out, peaceful, I think is pretty important.
Yeah, I don't think we've any idea what it's like to be as big a star and as loved as she is in a country that sees her as quite that big deal. I don't think we have many stars in the UK that would overwhelmingly stop everybody in their tracks quite like that. And I think it's even more the case in America. Certainly, like, if you put tennis players, apart from Serena Williams, we've seen it with these, somebody gets to American number one, like Taylor Fritz. Nobody's making a massive deal about that. It bothers him. On the flip side, for someone like Świątek, though, I think she feels really watched wherever she's going.
Osaka went to Beyonce, didn't she? And she, you know, it was noted. People noticed that she was there, but, you know, it wasn't a huge deal, I don't think.
There was a very enjoyable low-key flex that I enjoyed in Iga Świątek's press conference, where it's always fun on media day where there's a local journalist who has an angle that he needs to ask everyone, and the angle this tournament, of course, is the fact that it's a 15-day event. So he was asking everyone, what do you think about the 15-day Australian Open? And Świątek said, well, it's been that way at Roland Garros and it's been fine for me. And I was like, yep, it has. I don't think you've got any problems with that.
But she's also never played on a Sunday, I don't think, at Roland Garros. And she did kind of say that in the answer. She was like, well, it might be a 15-day event, but I'm not playing Sunday. So,
yeah.
You know, she's never been in Ons Jabeur's situation of staring down the barrel of losing before the tournament really feels like it started.
She did look in as good a frame of mind on the eve of a tournament as I can remember. She looked comfortable in her own skin. And I was really pleased to see that, because I worry about Iga Świątek. I found myself feeling like that at the last couple of years' worth of slams. Just, it's a lot for her sometimes, and I don't think she always loves it. And I want her to love it, because I think she's such great news for the sport generally. And for her own health, you know, but it's good to see her looking like that.
Speaking of great news for the sport generally, Naomi Osaka press conference for the first time in a couple of years.
Well, just repeat what I've just said, because it's a similar feeling, and more so probably with her.
Yeah, I loved it. I got a real rush from just being in a Naomi Osaka press conference again, Matt.
Yeah, the whole energy of the day actually changed when Osaka came in. It was, you know, we'd had some good press conferences before, but it was like, I mean, Osaka press conferences are just so, she's always so thoughtful and interesting and says some unexpected things often. You know, she has a different take on things or something I wasn't expecting. And it was a pleasure to be back in one of her press conferences.
I get the impression she is balancing, really trying to not expect too much of herself. She gave this line, she said, I keep thinking to myself, who am I to think at my second tournament back that I could have any kind of impact on, you know, these incredible players at the top of the game. But then she also said, in a way, I'm glad I'm playing a seed in the first round, because if I get through that, then hopefully the next round won't be as hard, which is quite an unusual thing for a tennis player to say. I mean, how many players came through media day yesterday and it was one round at a time, one point at a time. I'm not looking beyond my first round. So there's obviously a tension between those two things. I think she's feeling really good and she's like,
she's fighting the
I'm a two-time champion here and
I can win it.
I feel like I'm playing great.
Yeah.
But
and I think we're having all those feelings with our predictions. So it's the same thing, like managing our expectations of her as well. She mentioned feeling a bit stiff and sore, didn't she, after Brisbane, but she said that it wasn't as bad as she was expecting. She said that because she always feels stiff and sore after she hasn't played for a long time, she was expecting it to be even worse because of, you know, the long break that she's had. So that was, I suppose, quite encouraging, but it does make me think that stringing together that many matches after not playing for so long, I think is going to be tough for her. I think there might be a maximum number of matches that she has here, and I don't know if it's seven. That just feels like so many.
You could imagine her beating Garcia, looking just sensational, and feeling, watching it, there's your champion. And yet, two rounds later, she might just be in a very different position.
Mm. Oh, you're such realists. I was looking forward to all getting carried away together about Naomi Osaka.
Come on, David loves getting carried away.
I'm doing a Naomi Osaka about her chances the way she is, I think.
Yeah.
I think she's excited by how... Yeah, I think she's excited fundamentally about how much she's loving playing the sport of tennis.
Yeah. Well, she's been hitting backhands with Amanda Anisimova. Yeah. What is not to love?
That was a moment,
could
wasn't
you,
it?
For the benefit of those joining us in a visual way, could you do the face that you made in the press conference room when she revealed that she'd been trying to improve her backhand via Amanda Anisimova? It was a lovely moment, wasn't it?
Why was I not invited to that practice? How did I not know about that? Like, oh, game recognising game right there.
I read an interview, a piece that Naomi Osaka, I guess it was done in Brisbane, I think, certainly done before the Australian Open, but came out yesterday in US Glamour magazine. And she talked about motherhood in a way that I've not read a tennis player talk about, or maybe even an athlete talk about motherhood before. I found it really striking yesterday that quite a few mothers came through the press conference room, which is great. And it's not that I don't think they should be asked about motherhood. I think it is absolutely superhuman that these women are sitting before us juggling not only the fact of motherhood, but the fact that they've, with various degrees of recency, been through pregnancy and childbirth as well. I think that is incredible and newsworthy and a brilliant story. And yes, it is legitimate editorially to ask them about it. But there were a couple of, you know, Kerber and Wozniacki's press conferences were pretty much exclusively motherhood. And then Medvedev comes in at the end of the day, who's become a father in the last 12 months, not one question about it. And I feel this massive tension about, I agree it's legitimate editorially, and yet I'm uncomfortable with that total disparity. But anyway, back to the glamour piece for Naomi Osaka. She talked about how struck she was. She talked about the physical impact of pregnancy and childbirth, which is maybe it's because it's a predominantly male press conference room usually, but they usually focus on the emotional angle of childhood. How difficult of parenthood, how difficult is it to be away from your daughter? How is your perspective changed as a result of becoming a mother? All questions that could be put to Daniil Medvedev. The questions that can't be put to Daniil Medvedev are the questions about pregnancy and childbirth and the impact that has had on them as an athlete. And Naomi Osaka is there talking about how shocked she was about what it's done to her pelvic floor and just how, you know, wild it was as an athlete being carrying a human for 9 months and then trying to return to being an athlete after that. And I'm so glad she's talking about that. And also campaigning for statutory parental leave in the United States, which isn't currently a thing. One of 5 countries in the world that doesn't have statutory parental leave. Wild. Yeah, I loved it all.
And I had heard her talking to your colleague Russell Fuller, David, on the BBC a couple of weeks ago in Brisbane, where she spoke about the fact that, you know, she's often asked about, you know, being an inspiration for mothers, and she's like, yes, I want to be, but also I want to stress that, like, it's really not normal that I've come back so quickly. I had an incredible team around me that most people just simply would not be able to have. She sort of recognized her own privilege there in terms of being able to just have trainers who were working with her every single day to get her in this shape so quickly. And she's like, that's not normal. Like, you shouldn't, people shouldn't necessarily be trying to do that or live up to that. Like, and I thought that was really important, really perspective.
Absolutely. So, so important. Okay, so Osaka's not winning the Australian Open. Disappointing conclusion of that chat. But she could have a run. It sounds like you think
she could absolutely have a run, and I am not counting it out because I don't know how physically robust one can expect her to be, and like how much gas is in the tank really for any athlete returning after such a long layoff to immediately go into a Grand Slam, let alone somebody who has given birth in that period. And I think, you know, not everybody's the same, are they? Not everybody has the same physical constitution. And so I don't want to judge her on everybody else, but I'd be surprised. I think she will win another Grand Slam title, but I don't think it's going to be this one. I just wouldn't completely count it out because she's that good. And she does look bloody fit.
When she walks down that Rod Laver tunnel and touches her own name, you know, and gets that energy source of her as a former champion, I'm going to be like, okay, she can win the tournament.
But, such a great mover.
You know, such a long way. And also, when she's won her majors, there's always been like an like a match that was on the edge.
Mm.
You know, she's always overturned something or
with
come back
surge.
From a deficit with a surge. And I'm, you know, is that still there? You know, I think it probably is, but like,
bloody hope so.
I bloody hope so. But, you know, it's...
There was a moment in time where the Naomi Osaka surge was the best thing in tennis.
Yeah.
It was truly an electric feeling to watch. It felt like she'd got a superpower that she could just push a button, the surge button. I do think what we saw from Svitolina last year made me think kind of anything's possible.
Okay.
Because that was a comeback. You know, she didn't have long before she was suddenly playing the best tennis of her career, I would say.
And
Osaka is a way better player.
Two other returning parents that can tap a picture of themselves on the way down the tunnel to Rod Laver Arena, Caroline Wozniacki and Angelique Kerber, they both came through the press conference room yesterday. Kerber, interesting, they're in very different positions, aren't they? Like, it feels like Kerber just took maternity leave. The comeback, she said yesterday, the comeback was always in her mind. She said she didn't want to just assume it would be possible. She left room for the possibility that the whole experience would change her in a way that made coming back impossible or undesirable, but it was always plan A. So she kind of took maternity leave, whereas Caroline Wozniacki fully retired, had a lovely ceremony here 4 years ago.
Really set the standard of what an on-court retirement ceremony
gold standard. And now here she is back 4 years later and a mother of two. I didn't get tons out of their press conferences other than they seem thrilled to be here, having a lovely time. Wozniacki was asked about the fact that the top 10 now is entirely different to 4 years ago, the last time she played here. There's not a single retained member of the women's top 10. And by implication, she was kind of asked to compare eras. And she very much intended to answer this question in a very bland way. She started off with the... And in fact, Kerber got asked by you, David, the same question, didn't she?
Well, yeah, you sort of told me what Wozniacki
right.
said.
And Kerber did successfully swerve it, totally yeah. successfully.
And I couldn't help... I wanted to then see what she thought, really,
right?
Because Wozniacki's had been genuinely quite interesting.
Yeah, so Kerber just said, you can't compare eras, everyone's great. Obviously, Serena may be in a category of her own, but who can say? Caroline Wozniacki started off saying that. It was all going very well. And she said, you can't compare eras, but you also can't compare anyone to Serena. Fine. Pretty uncontroversial at this stage. She said, I think when she was on, she would have beaten anyone playing now. I think Iga Świątek might have something to say about that. I kind of hate comparing eras. I don't find it fun or interesting, but
because that can't really be
challenge. It's like doing a philosophy degree all over again.
I do sort of feel like with a player who's struggled against big hitters a couple of times, Ostapenko, Rybakina the last year or two, imagine Serena with the serve full throttle. I think Świątek could actually learn how. I think she will get better. I mean, this is what Kerber was saying, wasn't it, that Świątek's getting better. She's going to get better. And I do feel like, you know, her top level, her ceiling is so high. But no, it was really interesting to hear the way Wozniacki was just dismissing this current era.
Yeah, because she ended the answer by saying the old top 10, she referred to it. And I think by implication there, she meant the one that I was in was the greatest ever.
Sorry, Martin Navratilova and Chris Evans.
Yeah, so
I was world number one in the greatest ever era.
Just checking before, Coco Gauff was the last woman through the press conference room yesterday. In the main press conference room, anyway, we obviously went to Emma Raducanu's press conference, which was populated mostly by Brits. We will touch on that in just a moment. But Coco Gauff, her first slam as a Grand Slam champion. It was her that I asked about the Olympics. She said it's a priority. Quite right too.
Okay. She really wants that medal, doesn't she?
Yeah, and then made a great point, I think, that like a medal, like she sees a gold in mixed or a gold in doubles as equivalent to a gold in singles. Like,
and I get that. I get how Olympics is a leveler in that way. Like an Olympic gold medal or bronze medal, it's silver, I'm really not fussed about. That is what you want. It's on your mantelpiece. And
there was a funny moment, I thought, where you know, she was talking about her potential mixed doubles partners. And I think there's two mixed doubles teams per nation. And obviously, you know, Jessica Pegula always plays with Austin Krajicek. And honestly, they're not great together.
They're not
a great team.
No. And the US Open was... Yeah, it wasn't great.
They have had some results, but like it's not been great for a while. And like I was like, Coco Gauff was like, so I'll probably play with Rajiv Ram. And I was like, I think that's good for you. I think stick with that. You've come out of that well, I would say, Coco.
he'd be a good partner.
Yeah,
Rajiv Ram.
Good. He's good energy. I think very very calm energy, but I think they would complement one another very well. She was incredibly open, I thought. Coco Gauff. I mean, not that she's ever really not open, but she talked about one of the first questions, actually, from Tamani Karyol from The Guardian was about a slight tweak to her service motion, which I hadn't noticed. I didn't get to watch much of her in Auckland because I was covering United Cup in Perth. That's my excuse for not noticing. But it's interesting. I was poised and waiting for her to just bristle ever so slightly at this question because of how she's responded to questions about the forehand in the past and the suggestion that she might want to or need to or be thinking about making technical changes for that. But she was really open about it, wasn't she? She said, yes, I've made a very small technical change to my serve. It took me 2, maybe 3 days to get comfortable with it.
It'd be great, wouldn't it? Better pull that up.
And she said the aim is to make the ball toss more consistent, which is my bete noire with serving, the ball toss. So I'll pay special attention.
Yes. How many days would that take? More than 2 or 3.
More than are available in the universe, yeah. I think.
And I thought she gave a great answer, again, to Matt Futterman's question about sort of how long it took to sort of process the US Open win and all that kind of thing. And she said that she'd never had it in her mind that she would be a one slam person.
This was such a good answer, wasn't it?
So it was like, so, you know, it was great. It was a big deal, but like it was a step on the way. Like she's not where she wants to be yet. So obviously it was a big deal, but also I think she maybe didn't expect it at that slam. She spoke about how she didn't have her best tennis. She'd maybe sort of slightly checked out of the season, it sounded like, sort of after Wimbledon, in terms of like, okay, this isn't going to be a great season, let's just play a bit more free. And that obviously created this incredible summer for her. But, you know, she said she wants to win double digit slams.
Again, I wondered if she might. So there was the answer to that question to Matt Futterman. She said, I know some people when they just want to get over that winning a slam hurdle. And when they do, it's like, what's next? That's what she said. You know, Dominic Thiem immediately sprung into my mind there, but there are plenty of examples. But that was never her mindset, because she always intended on winning multiple slams. And then it was followed up. There was a follow-up question to that. Are you prepared to put a number on how many? And again, I thought, we're going to get a shutdown here. We're going to get a really polite shutdown.
Yeah. Yeah. And she said, I want to win multiple. I mean, I guess double digits. And like I think it was the last year or two I've wanted to win double digits. And I had a real feeling of discord in my heart when I heard this, because of what she told us, I think, at the French Open last year, about how the stress of all already having been anointed as a Grand Slam champion when she was just 15, as somebody who's going to win a Grand Slam title, and when's it going to happen, and how quickly is it going to happen? Is it going to happen as fast as it did for Serena? That put enormous pressure on her, and understandably, and probably held her back for a while, and she got really stressed and quite depressed. And listen, I just thought, hold on a minute, is it, well, which is it? Because you've just given yourself the target of multiple Grand Slam titles, double digits. So you win two more. You've just put this image in everybody's head of, okay, but is she going to reach 10? Like she said. Now, I'm the one with the problem here, right? She may be absolutely fine with this, but
David.
It just struck me that doesn't quite tally with what she'd said she didn't need to hear before. So maybe she feels different.
Well, yeah, maybe it's a sort of indication that she's changed her mindset. She's better able to sort of say those goals out loud and not feel like it is putting pressure on herself. It was a great moment. And like double digits, like anywhere between 10 and 99.
But then,
Mira Andrei,
to me, that was the feature of Media Day that I take away above all else, is the mental approach of Świątek, of Coco Gauff. We'll come on to Raducanu in a little while. All of them, it felt the same to me, that what's going on in their heads is having a massive impact, and they're admitting it. They're very open about it.
Yeah, I texted the group at about 4:30 p.m. having come out of Jannik Sinner's press conference, which was the last one I attended of the day, saying I have reached saturation point with the word mindset today. I very much stand by that. Let's come on to Raducanu. Because she came into room number two, which I think is quite right. I don't think she'd have been coming in had she not been requested by the Brits. It tends to be sort of top eight players and then any other big, you know, Wozniacki, for example, or Kerber. They're former champions here. So Raducanu, room two, but very, very well attended. I was trying to kind of read the body language, because while she's always, I think, been genial with the press and the British press in press conferences, sometimes you can see that her body language is defensive. And I think, you know, I get it. Absolutely. I did think she looked a little bit looser in that respect. And then in answer to one of the early questions, she came out with a killer line to that effect, didn't she? She said, I feel a lot now, lighter now than I did for a long time after the US Open. I'm not playing with a backpack of rocks.
It's a huge line.
Said everything.
I've never heard her say anything quite like that before. She has talked a little about the pressure and what it was like after winning the US Open, but I feel with this distance, What are we now? It's two and a bit years, isn't it? Two and a bit years? That's right, isn't it? Since she won the US Open, you can really have some perspective. And I'm hopeful for her. The only doubts are about her physicality, and that's very clear from the way she was rating her own game.
Yeah.
I mean, when she looked us in the eye, she said, look, my game is good enough to basically take me wherever I want to go.
Yeah, because she was asked, I think, by Mike Dixon, what success for her would look like this year. And she framed it in terms of being able to stay fit and play. Then she sort of tagged on at the end, But if that happens, my game's too good for that basically not to bring about big results as well. And I loved hearing that, because I think that's true as well. Like, staying fit and being able to play, if she's able to do that, the results, I do think, will come. Like, she might not win the US Open. Mm. She probably won't. But I think she'll have big results if she can just stay fit. And I must say, I do think on that, I am still a bit worried that she hasn't got a full fitness team in place. Like, nothing's really changed in terms of being able to stay fit.
She just doesn't rate coaches, does she? I mean, and the whole business of what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, well, there was. I agree with you. Overall, positive and uplifting from Raducanu. There was one quite big red flag for me, which I can't get out of my mind, and that was her line. She was obviously asked about coaching quite a lot. She's got Nick Cavaday with her here in Melbourne, who was a childhood coach of hers. She had Jane O'Donoghue. Yeah, she had Jane O'Donoghue with her in Auckland, who was also somebody she worked with when she was younger. Look, Max Eisenbud told us in an interview, this is not a post US Open approach to coaches. This is how the Raducanus do things, and it's how they're going to continue to do things. She was obviously asked quite a lot about that, and she said, there was a line in there when she was kind of explaining, she said, no one can tell me anything. She said, one of the things I've learned is that no one can tell me anything, because no one has been in my position. And she said, I think that's been, realizing that has been part of a toughening up process for me. And look, I get it. I realize that there are some things in life and in sport that you just need to hear, that will only land if you hear them from someone that has been there. Andy Murray with Ivan Lendl. I don't know what Ivan Lendl said to Andy Murray to get him over that line, but it definitely needed to come from Ivan Lendl, who'd been in the exact situation that Andy Murray had been in, with five Grand Slam finals without winning one. I get that. That is a thing. But Andy Murray's had plenty of other coaches that have been in nowhere near the situation that Andy Murray has been in, that have contributed a lot to him getting into those Grand Slam finals and contributed to the position where Ivan Lendl was able to get him and the team over the edge, that there is plenty to be learned from other people as well. And I'm a big believer in psychologists and therapists and all of that. And to kind of discard that whole discipline and whole world of help that's available just because people haven't been in the same shoes as you, I find a bit of a worry and an incredibly isolating, lonely mindset. We should have a honk that goes off whenever anyone says mindset. But that sounded so lonely to me, because, I mean, literally nobody's been in the position Emma Raducanu has been in. Nobody. So what, there's only you that you're prepared to listen to in the world. That made me a bit sad.
She was specifically talking about psychologists, wasn't she, in that answer? And I did think that it probably tells you how hard it's been for her to find anybody to trust the last couple of years. And she referenced that as well, didn't she? You know, would you do anything differently over the last 2 years? I probably had to work out who to trust, was the gist of her answer. And surrounding myself with the right people. It's tough. It's tough for her to know which way to go, because she still has that completely independent streak and belief in her own mind and her own opinions and her own. And I think that's been instilled in her and probably reminded to her by her dad, from what we hear. I hope she works it all out.
Me too.
I really do.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Coming on to Andy Murray, he was the first through the doors, wasn't he? Nice and prompt, 11:15 a.m. Sort of quite an unremarkable Andy Murray press conference, really, other than the fact that he was kind of pledging, I think, to at least try and make his first round match against Thomas Martin Echeverry less of an ordeal for himself and for us than their two previous meetings.
You'd expect him to be hitting beefy shots in this match because, and there was this great line where he was asked about his previous matches, I think by Simon Briggs against Echeverry, and what ordeals they had been. And he said, well, I think it's me that made them ordeals.
He said, I think I made pretty much all of my matches pretty physical last year.
Yeah, because Simon framed the question in terms of Echeverry making the match physical. And he was like, I'm doing that myself. And he spoke about his serve, didn't he? He said that in his matches against Echeverry last year, he felt like he didn't serve well enough, so he wasn't getting cheap points. He makes a lot of returns, so it was a lot of long rallies. And I think you're right. I think he needs to play a bit more first strike tennis, you know, big serve, big forehands.
For all our sakes, Andy.
Please.
Daniil Medvedev was the other sort of significant, well, Jannik Sinner as well, although that was a sparsely attended press conference, let me tell you. I put my hand up to ask the first question because I couldn't handle the awkward silence. look, it was at the end of the day. I don't think there are any Italian media here yet, so it's nothing on Jannik Sinner. It's just one of those things. And to be fair, Daniil Medvedev, yeah, I was shocked at how few people
half
were in there for that.
Half a dozen people in them. Actually, you talk about interview room two. I prefer that because it's a smaller room. It's a good auditorium, but it's a small, intimate room where you feel like you can have a chat with somebody. I actually feel quite sorry for the players in the big main interview room, which is this wonderful theatre. But you've got this room full of 100-odd seats, probably more. And you've got, like, in Medvedev's case, there were five of us, six of us, something like that, which great for us. We had a good chat with him. But, yeah, it's slightly awkward.
He was asked, actually. Well, no, it was the first question comes from the moderator. And it tends to be quite a generic one. How are you feeling about your preparations? And Medvedev, in his answer to that, led us to what I was intending to ask him about, which was the fact that he'd elected not to play a warm-up event. And he said, I know it's a risk, but it's something I want to try. He said, I don't want to get to the end of my career and not know whether this is something that can work. So I thought, why not? Like, now's as good a year as any to give this a go. And I followed up and I said, do you consider it a risk? And he said, sure, yeah, but lots of things are a risk, and that's not a reason not to go for it.
I thought it was a really interesting answer, and there was a recognition that it might be a risk for this event, but also it might pay off later in the season. You know, he spoke about how fatigued he was after the US Open last year, you know, just sort of relentless schedule. If he had done what he normally does, he would have only had sort of 2 week training block during the off season. As it was, that was much longer. It was extended. He feels fresher. He looked fresh. I thought he looked. Mm. Yeah. He was pretty vibrant, wasn't he?
And which is great, but we do know Medvedev plays his best tennis when he's bedraggled, totally dishevelled. So,
true. Yeah, but no, I'm fascinated to see how he comes out here. I think he's. I can't quite remember who he's got in the first round. I think he's got potentially Ruusuvuori in the second round, who reached the final in Hong Kong, is in some pretty good form. I think that would be a big test for Medvedev. I think we'd find out where Medvedev's level is. Great ball striker, Ruusuvuori. But I think Medvedev would probably quite like that matchup. But yeah, I love the fact that he's open to trying different things and the fact that he doesn't want to leave any stone unturned. And, you know, it might be an amazing decision. And, you know, he's prepared for it to happen either way. He's just pleased to have tried it. And I think that's important for him.
There was a very new year, new you energy to Medvedev, wasn't it? It's like he'd been on Instagram and seen some, you know, positive new year affirmations posts and thought, yeah, I'll get on that train.
He just looks very unstressed about it all, doesn't he? Sort of just slightly amused at giving something else a try. He's another one who just walks into the room with us and he's just immediately wants to say, how are you doing? Really nice to see you all again. He's
Happy New Year. And he was like, oh no, that was a long time ago.
wasn't being drawn on the Breakpoint episode, was he?
No, yes and no, I would say. Because I felt whilst he was quite pointed about effectively, using your words, new year, new me sort of thing, not getting embroiled in these kind of he said, she said conversations in press conferences. He actually stated that. I don't want to lose energy.
He said, I'm going to play less FIFA and not get embroiled.
And I mean, which felt very directed towards probably the back and forth he had with Zverev last year around the Monte Carlo saga. It was me who asked him a question, and I asked him how he felt he had been depicted, presented in the Breakpoint episode, which was basically the Zverev episode with some Medvedev shoehorned in as the pantomime villain. And I watched it yesterday morning, and that's the reason I decided I wanted to watch it so that I could go in and speak to Medvedev.
David left his toasty.
Yeah,
at lunch, and was like, "Hold the toasty, I need to go to the Medvedev press conference."
And I just wanted to ask him how he felt he'd been depicted, and he said, "I haven't watched it, but I've seen bits." So he's probably seen the same bits that people have seen on social media. Now, I watched it yesterday morning. I intimated before I'd seen it on the podcast that I, from the reports I'd read, from the reviews I'd read, that it sounds outrageous to me, that episode that Alexander Zverev is featured as its hero without even referencing the two accusations of domestic abuse, both of which he denies, one of which was told to be insufficient evidence by the ATP, but the second one he's received a penalty order from, in which he's now taking to trial against to appeal. Those things were not mentioned in that show once. There was lots of dramatic, almost celebratory racket smashing shown by the producers as if to show what a passionate guy is. And he's heard to say, I'm a passionate guy, Zverev. The Acapulco incident where he got defaulted from the tournament after just the most awful attack, really, on the chair umpire by smashing his racket into the chair inches from the guy's feet, was not shown. That just doesn't appear. And neither was the Daniil Medvedev monologue after the Monte Carlo match. They show the match, the highlights of it. They show all of the sort of kind of underhand tricks that Medvedev does play in the match, and he does do lots of stuff. I found it very funny at the time. I found it very funny in the Netflix show as well, watching him kick away the net post thing and all the rest of it and walk off to the toilet the way he does, you know, suddenly out of nowhere. But you don't hear Medvedev's response and subsequent takedown of Alexander Zverev. The whole thing was designed to show Alexander Zverev as the hero, And frankly, Daniil Medvedev is the villain. That's what happened. And I think it's outrageous. And I think that Daniil Medvedev thinks it's outrageous as well by what he wasn't saying. I'm not going to get embroiled in it. But at the end of it, he said, we all know that's not real life.
I'll just say, I don't think he's going to go the whole year without getting embroiled. We all know how New Year's resolutions go. we are going to be doing a show for friends, talking in more depth about the new series of Breakpoint, and that'll be coming over the next few days. We need to finish watching it first. We had to take a break after watching episode 4 yesterday, but we will struggle through it for the sake of friends of the pod. I wasn't expecting my blood pressure to get so high so early in the morning. Jannik Sinner, the last player on my list to talk about. Not lots to say because it was so sparsely attended, but I did put the Medvedev comments about the risk of, you know, trying something different by not playing a competitive warm-up event. And again, Jannik Sinner sort of started off by saying, oh, I don't really think of it as a risk, but then he did sort of call it, he ended up sort of talking through it and pretty much talking himself into the same position as Medvedev, which was, this is a data gathering expedition for me. I'm going to see if it doesn't work, then obviously I won't do this again in the future. But obviously he played right to the end of the Davis Cup finals, and he said he wanted maximum off season after that. He said he barely even took a week of holiday. So I don't think he went to the Maldives. So tough times for Jannik Sinner.
He doesn't strike me as a real Maldives kind of guy.
No, skiing, I guess. Skiing guy.
I tell you though, when he walked past me, I didn't go to the press conference, but he walked past me and I was taken aback by how tall he is. And
you're always taken aback by how tall he is. At some point, you're going to have to remember.
That's everyone's reaction to you as well. Yeah.
But I don't move like that. I
mean, in Indian Wells, you spent 2 weeks talking about how tall he is, and he's significantly shorter than you.
How can he be that tall and move that well? I don't think, pound for pound, if you can't really use that, can you? I don't know what the equivalent is for height. Nobody moves like that at that height. It's staggering to me. He's
all that skiing.
Mm.
He's one of the most intriguing stories of the tournament for me, because he's yet to prove anything at these Grand Slams, and he's proved it elsewhere. He's taken our expectations of him to another level, certainly mine, at the end of last year. But he has to do it now at the majors, and I'm just so intrigued to see if he can.
It's we know it's so hard to carry over momentum from the end of one season into another. It just did feel different the way Sinner was doing it. The fact that he was beating all of the top players in that run. It wasn't like he was just cleaning up when everyone was just absolutely on fumes. You know, he was beating Djokovic in the Davis Cup semi-final, when Novak Djokovic has said, I want to win the Davis Cup to turn this into one of my all-time great seasons, maybe my greatest season. The Sinner beat it. Like, it was huge. So it did feel different, but suddenly you come out fresh at the new season and it's like, God, that was actually quite a long time ago. And like narrow in a slam, he hasn't played, and it feels hard to carry it over. But I agree with you, David. I'm fascinated by Jannik Sinner this tournament. But I do think it's a bit tricky against Van der Zandschulp in the first round. Like, I think he'll win, but
he plays Sunday,
just
doesn't he?
A little bit on edge about that one.
Yeah, Sunday start. They are they're going in big with the Sunday start this year, which I really appreciate. I remember when the French Open did their first Sunday start, and obviously they were the first slam to do that, and the big launch was like, it was Gilles Simon headlining or something, which obviously, you know, bigger deal in France, but still, I like that the Australian Open have gone in punchy with their Sunday start, and they've got both defending champions headlining their opening night session. They've got Novak Djokovic against Dino Prismic, who is a talented young Croatian player, 18 years old, 178 in the world. He's a qualifier and naming no names, one of our predictions entrants, our first predictions entrant, has gone in big with the Dino Prismic to win.
And it's not
prediction.
Reggie.
It's not Reggie. New Reggie. So that opens the first night session. And then we have another qualifier, Ella Seidel, another 18-year-old, a German, 172 in the world, to take on the women's defending champion, Aryna Sabalenka. The day session starts with Jannik Sinner against Botik van der Danschulp. He's in the Ons Jabeur slot. Jannik Sinner against a tough opponent. I agree, Matt. Very interesting. And then Maria Sakkari against Nao Hibino. And interestingly, on the Sakkari front, we understand that she has employed the services of Ben Crow, who is the psychologist that worked with Ash Barty throughout her Grand Slam winning period.
That's another fascinating development, because he, according to Barty, had a massive impact.
And absolutely.
I remember hearing him interviewed, he really was something to listen to. And she is perhaps the player of all of the players that has work to do there.
Mm. The second court is opened by Barbora Krejcikovic. She takes on the Japanese wildcard Mai Hontama. And then we have Andrei Rublev against Thiago Szybocz-Wucz. Is that what we're going with for that? Let's not say it again. And then we have the night session on the second court. Magda Linette, last year's semi-finalist, tricky opener for Caroline Wozniacki, who is a wild card. And then we have Frances Tiafoe against Borna Coric.
Into it,
yeah. John Kane, Vodafone, Hisense, Melbourne Arena. Leila Fernandez against a Czech qualifier, Sara Bajlik, 17 years old, 134 in the world.
Yeah, I think she qualified last year as well. And so she qualified 2 years in a row. Just another young Czech. So she's probably very good.
Leila Fernandez is somebody I'm going to be watching out for this year. Second on the John Kane Arena is the Aussie qualifier, Dane Sweeney. He's taking on Francisco Cerundolo. It's all set up, isn't it, for him to be a sensation. Now Millmania is over. Yeah, poor old John Millman announced ahead of time that the Australian Open was going to be his last tournament. Didn't get a wild card into the main draw. Played qualies, lost in the second round of qualies.
Yeah, that's tough.
The headlines were that Millmania has come to an end. Taylor Fritz is third on the John Kane Arena. He takes on Facundo Diaz Acosta. What else do we have? Kia Arena, one of my favourite courts. Matteo Arnaldi has got a sensation. Adam Walton, he's 24. He's ranked 176 in the world, is Adam. He's a wild card, and he's got Arnaldi. Then we have Elise Cornet, who is a wild card as well. She takes on Mira Timofeeva, a 24-year-old Russian player. Samsonova against Anna Samova. That's what I was looking for. Yes. Third on the Kia Arena tomorrow. For anyone messaging us saying, I'm coming to Melbourne Park, I'd like to try and bump into you if I can. Matt will be at Samsonova, Anisimova, third on the Kia Arena on Sunday.
And very handily, it's the nearest court to the media centre.
It is, yeah. It's all coming up, Matt Roberts, folks. And then you can stay on, Matt, because not before 5 p.m. over there, you've got Sensation, Jason Kubler against Daniel Galan. Anything else?
I won't be there for that.
Fabian Marajan is on the 1573 Arena. What else have we got? Daria Sneeger. She qualified. I couldn't take my eyes off her in qualifying yesterday.
So I'm very interested to see whether Marajan ends up becoming anything more than the bloke who once beat Alcaraz. A bit like how Evgeny Donskoy almost beat Roger Federer once and probably lived off that.
Did he beat Roger Federer?
He lived
Dubai?
Off that for
2017 Dubai, just after Federer won the Australian Open.
Yeah. At least half a dozen years he lived off that.
Alina Korneyeva is somebody I was going to draw attention to. She is third against Sara Cerebes Tormo on court six tomorrow. This is one for real nerdy tennis fans, but she's qualified. And if you're thinking, gosh, I recognise that name a bit, she was big in juniors. She won the first two junior Grand Slams of the season last year, and I think she won some junior Grand Slams the season before. So this is her transition. She's been a very, very big deal in the juniors for quite a long time. So we'll see how she can get on with that transition into the seniors. Lloyd Harris against Quentin Alice is a first round. Jodie Burridge against Tamara Korpach for British tennis fans is first on court number 13. David had a good time watching Leolia Jean-Jean qualify yesterday. Yeah. She's got Caroline Dollarhide in the first round, court 13 tomorrow.
It's slightly confusing. A lot of the courts start at very different times. There's a batch of courts that start at 11. There's some that start at 12. I think there's some that start at 1.
It's like coming in waves.
Would that be Sunday related?
And maybe I think so. I think they're staggering it really, aren't they? Across the 3 days, the first round. So it is a little bit. Check your apps.
It's going to be an adventure for all of us tomorrow.
What's going on?
We're going with the Iga Świątek approach of we've done Sunday starts before and they've gone well for us. So we're going to be fine. That's just about it, folks, for your first Media Day show of 2024, except to tell you about Usher, our mascot brought into our lives by Katie, the 13-year-old Labradoodle. Hello. I don't know if Katie and Usher are with us right now, but hello. We have our mascots. David's got Francis.
Francis.
Still can't get over this. I've got Darwin. And Matt has Haida and Soma.
Yes. Hello. Hello.
Billie Jean, who I believe is watching slash asleep. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss Squirrel. We have our top folks and executive producers, Greg, Chris, Jamie and Jeff. And Matt, we've got shout outs. Can you do them off the top of your head this time?
No, but thankfully my phone is not safe healthy. And sound today. We start with Kateri Swavely in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Pennsylvania.
Right, Kateri.
Hello, Kateri. What was the surname? Swavely.
Swavely.
Little bit like Sweeney of Dane Sweeney sensation fame.
True.
That's the best I can do. Pennsylvania, though. Not a state that Matt and I have driven through. Although Matt did go to Pennsylvania last year.
Yes.
Home of Scranton?
Correct.
From The Office?
Very good.
That's all I've got.
I went to Pennsylvania and forgot to play and listen to Streets of Philadelphia while I was in Philadelphia. It's one of my big regrets of last year.
You've got to go back.
Yeah, I do. We also have Eleanor Lucero, who is in Massachusetts.
Which is a state that we've driven through.
Hi, Eleanor.
Any more specifics about where in Massachusetts?
Lowell.
Oh, I should have thought that through before asking because actually...
We have nothing to say.
No, I know Boston and I know Foxborough, which is just outside of Boston.
And Eleanor says, growing up in the suburbs of Boston before ESPN and the Tennis Channel, my mum and I lived for Wimbledon coverage on the weekend, watching NBC's Breakfast at Wimbledon with Bud Collins while eating strawberries and cream are among my most treasured memories.
Oh, Eleanor, that's lovely.
That's the best. Bud Collins.
Bud Collins what memories a legend. Are good memories to have.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Eleanor.
Neckcord. We've also got Carolyn, who is in Long Island, New York.
Hi, Carolyn.
And Carolyn says, trying to get my wife excited about tennis by combining tournaments that I want to go to in warm weather locations with a hotel spa. Indian Wells could work.
I think you're...
Carolyn, you're nailing it.
Yeah.
Absolutely you're nailing right it. There. New York, a state that Matt and I have driven through.
Got another one of those. Well, it's the same state.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Lorna Lamott in Flushing, New York, home of the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center.
Wow. Imagine being from Flushing.
I'm imagining it.
They've got a golf course, haven't they? We haven't played it. We never have time. One day.
Yeah. We have a post-Wimbledon golf tradition, don't we?
Yes. But
we haven't carried it over to the other...
What
majors.
Info have we got here?
Not much more than that.
So what was the name of the person from Flushing?
Lorna.
Lorna. Tennis Lornas?
I'm struggling.
is a director I've worked with called Lorna on the tennis.
Okay, that's as good as we're going to get.
It's better than silence, isn't it?
Thanks, Lorna.
You two can pipe down.
We don't need anybody else. We've got Lorna, the tennis podcast listener.
Absolutely.
Friend of the show.
Thank you very much, Lorna. Thank you to...
Well, we've got one more. One more shout out.
Oh, sorry, Matt.
It's a good one. This says, my name is Deborah Rafson, and this shout out is for my sister Jill and her fiance Zach. Jill and Zach are getting married on Saturday, January 13th, 2024, which in Melbourne is today.
Oh.
And is that where they are, Melbourne?
Deborah says, I live in Boynton Beach, Florida.
I've been there.
And Jill and Zach live in Brooklyn, New York. Jill and I are huge tennis fans, and she introduced me to the pod. I go to the Delray Beach Open and Miami Open every year, while Jill is a longtime US Open attendee. We both sport our tennis podcast t-shirts, of course. Zach, since he came into Jill's life 2 years ago, has happily let us convert him into a tennis fan as well. The three of us have even started a silly Instagram account where we rate tennis trophies. Jill and Zach are special people, so please send them best wishes for their big day and a long, happy life together.
Zach and Jill, on the eve of your wedding, which I think is what it is where they are, many, many congratulations. If you've bonded over tennis, then I'd say you're set fair for a long and happy life together. Have a wonderful, wonderful wedding day. You're getting married on the first day of the Australian Open. It's perfection, although it does mean you're probably going to miss the first day of the Australian Open. So swings and roundabouts, but have a great day. Just as we will be having here in Melbourne, we can't wait. This is, it's kind of our first daily, isn't it? Because this is it for us now.
You can't get away from us.
The first of 16 days in a row, plus a review show for Friends of the Pod recorded at the end of it all. We've got our Netflix review show coming for Friends of the Pod as well. Just a quick plug, folks, for anybody that knows of the wonderful work of Hannah Wilkes, which I know will apply to everybody that is active in the chat on YouTube right now, anybody that follows us on Twitter. Frankly, what are you doing with your lives if you don't know about Hannah? We wanted more Hannah for 2024, so we have got her doing a monthly column for us, which from February onwards will be exclusively for Friends of the Tennis Podcast. But because David's very good at teasers and promos, January's edition is available for everybody. And it, I mean, I don't have the words, but just read it because it's so, so wonderful. The link is everywhere, isn't it? It was in our most recent newsletter. I'll pop it on Instagram again today. I'm going to keep promoting it. Sorry to embarrass you, Hannah, because I know you're live with us right now, but she's an extraordinary writer and we're very lucky to have her on the team. So do check out her writing. Follow us on Twitter for all of Hannah's work on there throughout the fortnight. Instagram as well is where you can get the BTS of our daily lives on site at the Australian Open. Sign up to the newsletter. Matt Stat returns tomorrow. Don't want to pile the pressure on, but Matt Stat does return tomorrow, Matt.
Yes, I better do some work on that today.
And yeah, make sure you join us daily from the 2024 Australian Open. It's going to be brilliant. And of course, if you want to become a friend, the link to do that is in our show notes. Thank you for joining us. However you have joined us today, it has been so much fun from our kitchen. It's not usually as clean as this. David did a sort of sweeping everything to the end of the kitchen island. It's all up there. The empty Deliveroo bags. But yeah, it's been brilliant to have your company and we can't wait for the next 2 weeks. So thank you for joining. We'll speak to you very soon.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.